Sunday, 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 coming to the Fairplex, it's Monster System Mastery Mayhem! Prepare to be blown away by the awesome might of the Jeffosaurus as he crushes player handbooks in his mighty jaws! Be sure to bring a change of pants because the explosive power of Johnulies will have you literally exploding in your chair! You'll pay for the whole seat, but you'll only need to sit in it for a while because you'll probably be standing for a bit since that guy with the really tall hat is sitting in front of you. Brought to you by Cheese Dudes. Show up early to get your free Cheese Dude mascot spanking and family portrait. Be there! If you're not there, you better be dead or in jail. And if you're in jail, I am so sorry. Please stay strong and go with Christ. Sunday!
Rock, if it's K-R-O-Q, not K-Rock, it should be Croc, as in...
No, it should be...
Listen to the mighty Croc!
No, it should be Killer K-Rock.
Oh, so
the Batman villain.
So K-K-Rock?
Yeah, K-K-Rock. Yo, what's up, everyone? This is K-K-Rock coming to you live!
1K short of a racist!
Oh, that is my favorite new thing. Be like, oh man, that guy is 1K short of a racist.
Kevin Klein, for example, 1K short of a racist. If his middle name was some other K word, I don't know, Kilowog? Yeah, Kilowog.
Yeah. Then... Kevin Kilowog Klein.
That's him.
Our famous, well-known celebrity.
He's part Green Lantern, but mostly, he's a thespian.
Mostly.
Oh, okay, welcome to the Afterthought Podcast.
Yeah, that Afterthought Podcast.
Every other week we get together and talk about something or whatever, and then we answer a bunch of your fan questions and do some polls and other random bullshit.
Yep, this is the fun podcast where we don't care anymore. We just do anything we want.
I guess we should try and talk about some topic that had to do with our previous edition, or book, or episode, or whatever it is that we did.
Whatever the hell we do here.
It's some kind of camp, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We run a camp here.
That's what we do.
We're so camp here. You can't tell, but I made jazz hands.
He did, and then I punched him and sock appeared on the screen.
So the last episode of System Mastery we did was the AD&D First Edition. That was our 50th episode.
And I'd be hard-pressed to say there's really a lot of lessons to be learned from AD&D that have not already been learned by people over the past 20 years. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff in that book that I did not know about.
It's surprising. It's a crazy, weird, dense book. The most surprising thing is so much of the stuff that we got when we did that episode that people said, oh, well, you didn't talk about this or you left out whatever. A lot of it came from the DMG, which just wasn't in the player's handbook, and I think that's one of the weirdest things about it, is so much information that you needed for the game wasn't in the main book.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, normally we only read one book for these things, so when we're reviewing these D&D books, we can't review the core three books, which has always been kind of a weird D&D mainstay. You ever notice only D&D gets to get away with that nonsense?
Oh yeah, no, there's no one else that gets to be like, hey, you wanted to play fucking...
Vampire?
Vampire? You have to buy Vampire the Masquerade, and then you gotta buy our Vampire Bestiary, and then you gotta buy...
The DMG about Vampire. I mean, they make all that shit.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is, they don't even have a, like, straight-up just vampire or storyteller guide so much. I mean, they do. But so much of it is just, here's a little bit about, like, this particular place. So they'll have a bunch of, like, Berlin by night, or Detroit by night.
Detroit by night.
Which is an actual book.
Was it written before Detroit fell horribly? Was it, like,
yes,
in the
mid-80s? Yes, it was before the fall of Detroit, when God cast it down.
Something happened to it.
Yes, the people of Detroit ate from the forbidden fruit, and were then no longer able to stay in the great promised land of making automobiles or whatever the fuck.
That's what it was. It was Lucifer himself that came down and said, let there be the Japanese auto industry.
I have brought you ruin and Hyundai.
And they got to the point where their art museum was almost about to sell off a bunch of paintings before someone came in and paid for them to just stay open. That's how bad it was in Detroit for a little while there.
Oh, Detroit. I'm sorry.
I know. Sorry, Detroit. All right, so the other thing I noticed when our comments about the AD&D book were people giving us their kind of personal stories about how crazy it was, they were a little upset at us for not covering the combat system enough. And that's fair, because that game's got a ridiculous initiative system where you're supposed to reroll every turn, and it's perfectly possible to take two turns.
Oh yeah, there's a lot
weapon
of...
speed is a thing.
The problem with that is, normally when people think the combat system of D&D, you think you already know it. Because the combat system for D&D is probably one of the most well-known now for, like, the rolling D20. You've got your various pluses and minuses, the armor class and everything. And that's sort of what it is now. But back in the day, it was real weird, and not even just Thaco weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very difficult to understand exactly how the combat in that game works. The best way to say it is that it doesn't, and that most people that are still trying to play AD&D today are probably using the second edition combat rules or something like that, just saying, oh, just roll to hit, don't worry about it. Worry about the weapon speed, don't even, it's okay, cool, it's cool, bro. You don't have to worry about what happens if you start trying to cast a spell on one turn and get interrupted, and what happens in the next turn. It's just a mess.
Yeah, most of the people, I think... that even commented on that said back in the day when they were even playing this when it first came out, they had house ruled so much stuff out of the game.
Yeah, and the one time I played AD&D, we were clearly using the second edition combat rules. Like, it was very obvious that he was like, you know what, I'm a crazy diehard weird physics teacher with Einstein hair and a record player in my classroom, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to fix AD&D into something that you can actually play. We also got a couple of really cool letters explaining Gygax and what his thought process was and why the demihumans suck. I thought that was kind of neat that we got those.
Yeah, no, that was an interesting look into... I mean, it may or may not be true. It's sort of apocryphal, but...
The basic idea being that Gary did not like Tolkien and instead preferred Conan and Vance and so on, and that he was only grudgingly allowing demihumans to be in his game at all.
Well, yeah, so much of what was in the game ended up only being there because of player request. So,
well, Cleric is a famous one as an example.
Oh, yeah, Cleric, the only reason that class exists at all is because one of his players wanted to be it.
Not just that, but because one of his players wanted to make the opposite of the vampire class that was in the game. And so they added and this is all way back when it was still a tactical war game and not just D&D, like the role-playing game.
Yeah.
But there was a vampire thing that was a very well-known tactical unit, and they needed an opposite for a human faction, and so the cleric was invented for that. So the cleric is literally the opposite of a vampire. That's what its power set is.
Yeah, and then you got the, all of the demi-human stuff mostly just there because his players... who were fans of Tolkien, who was the new hotness at the time,
yeah,
were like, oh yeah, we want to play as elves or dwarves, and he would just sort of go, ugh, fine.
Here they are, and here's why they suck. The other thing is that apparently a lot of the rules that we just think are crazy, and that we were really hoping for explanations of, you know, why multiclassing exists, or why there's level caps, and it's not in the book, but the apocryphal answer is because his players were annoying, and were constantly saying, well, I'm playing as an elf, and he's 300, so he should be level 20 as a wizard already. Which, that is bullshit, and he should have just said, that is bullshit, and moved on with his life. But instead, because he's a big old groggy nerd, in fact, the template from which all big groggy nerds were derived, he was like, well, while that is technically accurate, the level cap for an elf is level 11 in the art of wizardry.
Huh.
So I guess you could be level 11, except you're not, you're level 1.
Yeah, which, again, who fucking cares? Like, especially considering... so often in the AD&D book, he was very careful to point out, these rules are here because this is a game. I'm not trying to make a physics engine. I'm not trying to make something that completely reflects how life works. This is a game. These rules are in place because it is a game. Like, you know how you gain levels? By getting gold from dungeons. You know why that 300-year-old elf isn't level 20? Because he doesn't go into dungeons.
Oh, right, there's that. Also, because it's a game, and because we don't need every elf you meet to be level 20.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, just in the game, you go, great, this elf has been studying wizardry for 700 years. Well, really, has he gotten any loot? No, he's just been studying. Oh, well then, fuck him, he's level 0, he can eat my ass.
Or he's just whatever level you need him to be for the story, because he's not an adventurer. He's not a party member. We don't need to worry about it. It could have been that simple. I mean, he did such a great job on abstracting hit points, which was another interesting email we got from someone who was super mad at him for turning that abstract hit point things in, or turning hit points into an abstract, because it doesn't make any sort of sense, which, again, you know, that's fine. I can see that. The funny thing was that in the letter, he was saying that he might as well have said that a tank is, or a fighter is as strong as several battleships. And my initial reaction was, that's awesome. That's what they should have done.
Yeah, no, if they actually said, yes, no, there is a mystical thing that as you gain power, you just become ridiculously tough, such that you get hit with a ballista, and what would destroy a city wall just sort of bounces off your pectorals.
Yeah, because you're that awesome. Yeah, a fighter is as strong as five oxen is a great idea, and I love it. So I'm on board for that. But then again, I'm also of the opinion that this game is better if you accept alignment languages as just being gifts from the gods of alignments, and assume that everyone in the world knows what level they are and what class they have, because that makes for a really neat D&D game. Like,
well, yeah, considering you can do the whole, like, people have worked out, well, okay, any wizard could figure out what level they are
and what level spells are, because
what every level a spell is, and then how, and then after that, figure out how many hit points anyone has, because you would do a thing that does one hit point, and do that until they pass out, and then you go, okay, great, you have 10 hit points.
This is an interesting thing we're discovering. Yeah, where you can, it's possible for just about any edition of D&D to determine what level you are and what your class is and what hit points are and what experience is, especially in second edition D&D, where you could spend experience as a resource to create spells, which means you could learn that creating magic items sucked a certain amount of magic or of experience gain away from you. It's neat.
Yeah, it's one of those weird things where anytime someone tries to impose this verisimilitude and I need this game to be a physics engine, where it just breaks down, because the point of D&D, even as far back as the original D&D especially, it's a game. It's not supposed to do that. It's like saying, oh, this is terrible. Monopoly doesn't reflect true economic growth at all. Why, this is nothing like the real estate market. You're like, it's a fucking game. Of course not.
My favorite one of those weird nerd exercises in extrapolating rules of a game into what that game is like is people who worked out 4th edition D&D, because you can move diagonally at the same speed that you can move just straight along a grid. They determined that, okay, that means that the values of the Pythagorean theorem are different in the 4th edition D&D universe. And then they extrapolated based on what they would be if you could move diagonally at the same speed, where the size of the hypotenuse of a triangle would be equal to just the other two sides. So, not the sum of the square, but a different value. And then they were like, all right, well, that makes an insane amount of difference for things like orbital mechanics and how gravity works and what lines of sight are. And so it was like this, here's what the world of D&D would look like if the Pythagorean theorem didn't work. So that's my favorite nerd extrapolation.
Oh, yeah. Well, anytime you get that, or like the exalted thing where they're like, oh, yeah, the whole world of creation is flat. You go, oh, well, if you don't have any curvature to your planet, the higher you go up, you can just see forever. Well, that's amazing. I use abilities that let me hit something as far as I can see, and I go up to the tallest mountain in creation, I can shoot anyone.
Yeah, although you would be able to do that even if you weren't on the tallest mountain of creation, because one of the weird things about how a flat Earth theory works is that instead of our natural curve downward where the horizon is, on a flat Earth, you'd actually, because of just optical illusions and the way light reflects, you would actually see the edges of the world start to curve upwards as you look farther and farther away. Eventually, it would just disappear because light's having a difficult time traveling, so you just see a blur. But you would see a definitive curvature upwards towards the end. So you'd have an easier time shooting people farther away on a flat Earth, even if you were standing on flat ground.
Hooray!
Fun stuff! All right, so
don't try and apply actual real-world physics to a game that doesn't want you to do that.
I'm so glad you managed to drag a final moral out of what we were just talking about, because I didn't have one.
Yeah, no, the moral is all of you people who love verisimilitude are dumb, and please tell me how much you hate that I hate that.
See, I love the verisimilitude thing. I just would love to play in a campaign where verisimilitude was, like, taken from the game's rules. Like, as opposed to, you know, this is supposed to be like the Dark Ages of England, so I'll change the rules to bend around for Dark Ages of England and have you roll to see if you get the plague and blah, blah, blah. I like one where it's, oh, you're level 5, and everyone knows you're level 5, and that's just part of the game world.
Oh, yeah, well, it's in one of my friend's D&D games, he set up a dry cleaning business because of the level 0 prestidigitation that removes dirt.
Mm-hmm.
So he was just like, Oh, great. I'm a level 1 wizard, and I set up a dry cleaning business. That's all I do. I cast level 0 spells, and I remove dirt from people, and that's it.
Or you could set up the peasant railgun. That's a thing. If you
the auto delivery service.
Yeah, the instantaneous delivery service by which you just have a bunch of peasants standing in 10-foot squares, and then they hand something to each other because that's a free action. So you start it at one end, and then it instantly appears on the other end because of an infinite series of free actions carrying it to wherever you wanted it to go. Although you can't use it as a railgun because at no point did the D&D model rules for momentum.
Oh, yeah.
So when it arrives there at the speed of...
It arrives instantly, but that's it.
That's it. There's no momentum accompanying it, so it just falls to the ground when the last peasant sets it down.
Yeah. So it's just weird delivery systems for things. You get the... you'd obviously have almost no disease, I would think. Because any cleric would be able, or even paladin, would just walk around and be like, all right, and cure disease, and cure disease, and cure disease.
Yeah.
And it's not like an antibiotic where you go, oh, it's become resistant to whatever. No, it magically got rid of your disease. It's gone.
Yeah. The one D&D campaign setting, I guess there's two. There's two D&D campaign settings that really embraced what would happen if just magic became commonplace and everyone got used to it. And one of them was Eberron, where, you know, they use magic for their transit system, and it's all controlled by guilds, and that one I thought was very interesting. The other one, Planescape, did that a lot, where it was just, oh, yeah, magic is normal. There's magic lights. Who gives a shit? Just move along.
Yeah.
Get back to sussing out the Lady of Pain and speaking in ridiculous cant.
Or, you know, you get to the point where...
You, Burke.
Fucking salt costs nothing because wizards know Wall of Salt and thought they were being clever.
Oh, the Wall of Salt spell, which generates something like 612,000 gold pieces worth of salt.
Yeah, so, you know, the first few mages to figure that out are like, I'm rich, and then every mage tried to do it, and now there's just salt everywhere, so it's not worth anything.
No, that's the story of how the Dark Sun universe came into existence. Athos was a great normal planet until some wizard figured out Wall of Salt, and then it was just fucked for everybody. All right, so okay, there we go. There's our fun moral: verisimilitude. Take it in moderation.
Yeah, if you're planning on applying a this should be real world physics to a game, only do it if that game actually wants you to do that,
mm-hmm.
or if you are willing to do like we said. Just completely take it at face value and let that be the world you live in.
Yeah. You want to get to some questions?
Sure. Might as well answer some questions. Questions from you, the listener.
Fan questions.
Open the mailbag.
Oh, man. We are turning into the flophouse real fast here. Okay. So first question comes to us from... Oh, hey. It's our old friend Nicky Cheeses.
Oh, good.
And he says, please talk about your local nerd store. What loyalty or antipathy do you have as customers? Do you feel any obligation to support a particular shop versus purchasing elsewhere or online? Personally, I feel spoiled for choice, having multiple game shops, multiple comic shops, and multiple comic and game shops quite locally, although I would only identify one as being my FLGS.
Yes, the friendly local game store. Mm-hmm. For those that don't know what FLGS stands for. Which, you know, it's possible, you might not.
Yeah.
Alright, so, do I have loyalty or antipathy?
That's a very special question for you, isn't it?
Oddly, yeah. Well, so I worked for a local game store.
One of, what is the, there are basically three.
There's, like, four of them.
There's three I can think of. One of them closed. We had one in Old Town, literally in the heart of the tourist center of San Diego, and that one never made any sense and didn't do any business, and so it's long gone. I mean, it was the kind of place where it had one employee, and he spent all day reading about tanks, and that was the end of that, so that's gone. But then we have our actual friendly local game store, Game Empire, which is nice and close to us, and run by a competent businessman and very fun.
Yep.
And that's the one John worked for.
I worked for them, and I do still have loyalty for them, mostly because even though I don't work there anymore, they're a great shop, no bad blood, everything's wonderful.
Oh yeah, they're good folks. And if you're in San Diego, you should stop by Game Empire. They're if you need gaming stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you need a game thing.
Yeah, or if you just need to stop by and play a game, because they've got a bunch of really good tables in a good situation. And, you know, so you can sit down and play your game of War Machine or Warhammer or Pokemon or whatever it is that you're into. Lots of tables, lots of play happening all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a really good store. And I've never worked for them, so I have some loyalty to them. They're my favorite local store to head out to, just because it's literally a couple blocks from the house.
Yeah. The antipathy thing is, there is a game store in San Diego that less that they had a rivalry with, rather than that store had a rivalry with Game Empire, and Game Empire just sort of shrugged and didn't care. So, that store ended up, the owner of that one is, I won't name names or anything, but he's kind of crazy and kind of has a thing about being better than the owner of that store.
All right.
So, it's just weird.
All right. Well, I mean, I know the store you're talking about, and they're also a pretty... I've got no problem with them, and I like a lot of the employees there.
Oh, yeah. So. It's mostly just the owner who's kind of a weirdo.
Yeah. But, you know, if you hadn't already called him a weirdo, I'd be saying hi to those employees right now.
Nah.
Hi, guys. You know who you are.
So there's...
there's a couple of good stores, and we like them all.
Yeah, there's four stores, really, in
San Diego.
So there's Game Empire, there's At Ease Games, there's San Diego Games and Comics, and there's Villainous Lair.
Oh, in that case, there's five. Because there's also Paradise.
Oh, yeah, there is Paradise, but it's a little far.
It is a little further away, but there's also Villainous Lair, and I had forgotten about them. But where the hell is San Diego Games and Comics?
San Diego Games and Comics is... like Miramar? This is... no one cares about where San Diego Games and Comics is.
I know. Well, first of all, this whole question's gone completely off the rails, because it really, originally we weren't supposed to be talking about how the stores locally are fighting with each other, but rather just sort of a sense of, oh, don't forget to support your local game stores,
guys. Well, oddly enough, normally having more game stores in an area is actually good. Most game stores like it when there are other ones because it fosters more community.
Yeah.
And there's more of an idea that gaming is an accepted thing. So instead of it being like, sometimes you'll see a type of store that it pops up in a community and you go, okay, I'm whatever, and then another one pops up and they get into a rivalry. Whereas most game stores end up being, no, everyone makes more money and does better if there are more game stores because it helps cater to that more.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, there's enough fans in any given city that even though a lot of those fans and players are going to say, oh, I have a favorite game store and I only go to that one, there's enough for everyone to get their pool of those guys, and then those guys still do end up going to the other stores to look for things they need.
And the nice thing is, if you've got someone who's like, oh, I like going to this store over that store or whatever, it means that they still support gaming. And so instead of it being like, say I didn't like any given store, but it was the only store around me, then I might be not only, I wouldn't want to support gaming through that store anyway, but then if someone else was saying, oh, I was thinking of going over to whatever store and picking something up, I, as someone that doesn't like to go there, might say, no, don't go there, I don't like that store. If there are multiple stores, though, you've still got that option of, oh, well, why don't we go over here? So right. It helps support gaming in general.
Well, it helps me out a lot, too, because I love Game Empire for books. And I go there for books on the regular. That's also where we generally go to find used books. Back in the era before people were mailing us them at a faster rate than we could even cover them. But that was when we first got started. I was buying all of our used books off the racks at Game Empire because that's great. They have a really good used selection. But they don't have all that great of a War Machine selection, which is my other hobby of choice. And so I go up to At Ease to get my War Machine stuff because they have everything all the time, 100%.
Yeah.
So it's great for me to have a local variety and I have loyalty to multiple stores. How do you feel about online shopping?
The online versus buying in store is, oh man, it is a dilly of a pickle. It is an issue because as poor gamers, you always look at something, you go, God, I could pay like $40 in store or $20 online. And I feel for certain things, I definitely want to go in and get it from a store. I mean, obviously things you aren't going to get for a discount online. So if it's like paints
I always get in store,
any particular new item that isn't like super discounted anywhere, and then of course looking at things like, is there shipping on this, how much am I saving for that,
yeah,
and do I want it right away versus later.
See, I primarily use local stores for any kind of book, whether it's new or used. All my painting and modeling supplies, with the exception of magnets, because magnets you have to get online if you want a lot of really small magnets. And that's about it. It's books, paints, and painting supply and hobby stuff. And then I also will buy, if I need small War Machine individual figs, I'll go and get them locally. But whenever I have a purchase, it's like, I need like $75 worth of War Machine stuff. At that point, I've tipped over and I usually end up getting it online. Cause I'm a bad gamer.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Now, I feel like I should probably want to buy things like board games and card games more online, because you can get a really good deal on there, but most of the time I like buying them in a store, because when I'm in a game store, I love just walking around and tactilely being able to pick it up, look at a game. A lot of times in a lot of stores, they have demo copies, so you can actually see what it looks like. I like that, and that's one of the big things I support in a local game store, is being able to know, if I go in there, are they going to give me, especially in most game stores around town here, they'll give you an honest opinion on a game. Like, if I walk up to a counter with a board game and I go, hey, what's this game like? Would you recommend this? A lot of them are going to give me a actual honest answer on what the game plays like, whether or not I would like it, things like that. And you can't, I mean, you can find reviews online, but I feel that actual tactile experience is so important for me in buying a game.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. And of course, that's just because you're a big board game buyer. I really don't buy board games, but the trunk of John's car is like the trunk of a drug dealer's car if that drug dealer is trying to get you hooked on, like, Monopoly. It's ridiculous. It's insane. I think you're running out of room for board games back there.
I think I can probably fit maybe one or two more smaller games back there, and then my trunk is just full.
Yeah, just completely full of board games. Anyway, that's a long time for one question. Why don't we move along?
Sure, why not?
Okay, what word should be bent into a new cuss word? This question comes to us from our good friend Jeff. Jeff Chaffee.
Yeah.
New
cuss word. New
cuss word. Well, you know, the last one that hit with any real kind of major success was Santorum.
Yeah, I was gonna say, so we could make it Get Trumped.
Yeah, Get Trumped or, something Huckabee.
Oh, yeah, I'm gonna Trump you
right... Trump you right in the Huckabee?
Right in the Huckabee.
I don't know what Trump is. Trump seems like it's already got way too many meanings, because it already means to Trump, you know, to Trump.
Yeah, somewhere. Well, yeah, there's so many meanings for Trump.
Huckabee, on the other hand, sounds like it could be an adjective.
Like throwing a bee at someone?
Well, okay, to huck a bee, that's also a thing, but but you could also say, like, oh, man, my dick's gotten all Huckabee in this heat.
But that's not really a cuss word. That's just descriptive.
Okay, that's fair. I guess we're not that good at this linguistically.
Like, I think with cuss words, you gotta have a hard consonant at the end, so, like, shit...
Oh, that's
fuck.
True. You've
got to have whole, something hard at the
I
end
I always
there.
Forget the story, but one set, it's the whole Norman and Saxon thing. We're all in Norm, whichever one won in their big battle, and the history nerds are really mad at me right now, but between the Normans and the Saxons, one of them was always like, copulate, fornicate, and the other ones were like, it's fuck. And then the losers were the ones who were saying, it's fuck, and so that's why those are bad words, while copulate is a good word.
Yeah.
That's an actual historical event brought to you from someone who doesn't remember when that happened or who was involved in it.
Or if it did happen. Yep. At all.
Ta-da! Same way the Bible was written. Do-do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah, so I think getting something short, so you want to have either one syllable or something that flows like, motherfucker is good because the beginning and end of it rhyme. You got that at the end.
Yeah.
So you want to have in a cuss word, you want to either have it be a one-syllable thing that you can, like, shout out in anger or surprise really quick. Or if it's going to be longer, it needs to flow.
So like a Scott Walker.
Yes, like a Scott Walker.
Is that right? Who's Walker? What's Walker? Which one's Walker in the presidential election?
I don't know. The Texas Ranger?
And one of them is Walker. There's also a Governor Rick Perry. There's something there, right?
Eh.
I don't know. God. Coming up with a new cuss word is hard.
Yeah, but if you're just like, jork.
Jork. Yeah, jork.
You know, jork. There you go. There's your new cuss word, you son of a bitch.
Jork, commonly used by blimplaggers.
Ah, jork, here comes the fuzz.
Oh, man, that'd be great if it was cuss words like Pirates of Darkwater, but instead it was for blimplagger.
So, you jatotten monkey bird.
Scut pango.
Yeah, no, Blimplaggers has their own cuss words.
Yeah.
Because obviously it gets turned into a children's cartoon
show.
Oh, it
absolutely does. The story of Chester Balloonman and his broken sword of destiny. And his filthy mouth pirate friend is always saying, jork.
Jork, you arcafed.
There you go, jork and arcafed.
There you go.
I don't want to explain what they mean because it's a children's show.
Exactly. So it's just, you go, ah, you arcafed, how dare you...
You smurfed me right in the jork.
You jorked me on that deal.
There you go. All right. I like that.
Oh, man.
Next question comes to us from Echo Cian, and it's, what are your favorite and least favorite character archetypes in media or to play in games, and what makes them interesting or awful to you?
All right, so let's do a best and worst of the archetypes, then.
How do we want to define archetype? Do we want to say that's, like, the hero's journey type hero, or do we want to say, like,
well, I mean,
the one virgin who always survives horror movies?
Yeah, no, those are all archetypes you could go into. If you wanted to say, like, the hero's journey hero archetype is interesting for, like, something like, say, Luke Skywalker, which very obviously goes through it.
Oh, yeah.
And, but I wouldn't say that's my favorite archetype.
What would you say is your favorite archetype? What's the best archetype, John?
The best archetype is, I wanna say the comic relief guy that ends up dying at some point, like what we thought Matthew Lillard would do.
Oh, yeah, like which he did not do in that movie.
Which
was
sad.
Which, spoiler alert, we reviewed that movie 2 days from now.
Yeah.
Okay, so yes, the comic relief who ends up dying. So like Wash, for example, in Serenity.
I love the character who isn't the protagonist, but definitely takes up a lot of screen time or a lot of word count that is there as sort of the classic way that a jester is,
mm-hmm.
in that, like, in the Shakespearean way that you would have, like, a jester is someone that's able to just sort of speak truth and doesn't matter and can see the world for how it is and comments on that. And that's the kind of archetype I like, is the jester. Someone who's there to make commentary on what's happening and bring to light how ridiculous things are. That's definitely my favorite archetype.
Okay. Let's see. I will go with the noble king who isn't the main character, but is still actually good and just. Because that's such a rare thing you encounter in media, where normally it's like any kingdom you see is corrupt, any police station you see is corrupt, and your hero is the only shining beacon of light in a bad universe. But I always like it when that's subverted, and it's like, oh no, no, this kingdom actually works great. There's some bad element, but I'm in charge here, and this is fine.
Yeah.
So I like that. What would you say is your worst?
Okay, so the worst archetype is the, in quotes, strong female character. The one who's like, I'm a strong female character because I'm literally just strong and I can fight, but then I still, during it, need a man to do things for me. Or
how about I only fight other women?
Oh, yeah. It's so weird. Like, you see a lot of the, I'm a strong female character showing up in things where they're only defined that way because they are given specific lines of, yeah, well, fuck you, a guy, I am a strong woman and I don't need you. And then by the end of the film's like, I've fallen in love with you and I'm going to give up my life of being a badass and be with you.
I'm trying to remember the name of the actor who is like, she's on Lost and she's also the helicopter pilot in Avatar. And that's all she does. That's like her entire career is playing that tough but feminine badass.
It's Michelle Rodriguez.
There you go.
Is what you're thinking of.
That is exactly who I was. Thank you. That's who I was thinking of. She tends to play that character a lot. I also just, I'm going to say if I'm agreeing with you here, but I'll have my own for later. But the Joss Whedon strong female character is super annoying to me. It's always a 90-pound ballerina badass.
Which, sometimes he does it better than others. Like, I liked, say, River more from Firefly as a strong female character.
Because at least she's fundamentally broken and there's something interesting about her.
She has a character type outside of that. Whereas, say, something like Dollhouse, Echo is just, I am a badass, okay? But what do you, like, what else? No, I'm just a badass. That's all I am.
I'm really good at dance hump fighting, and that's about it. I mean, that's the same character that she sadly has fallen into that trap twice, because that was all Faith did, and then she's also Echo. But then a lot of the, like, especially Iron Man 2 in particular turned Black Widow into that. Into, what are you? Oh, I'm really good at fighting by kind of strip fighting, and that's the end of my story.
Yeah, which that's another strong female character that they've ended up just not doing great with.
Well, I think they fixed Black Widow after Iron Man 2, but I mean, she's been really good. She was really good in the Avengers, the first one.
The first one. Age of Ultron, less so.
Oh, yeah, they threw a weird love interest at her. I mean,
weird love interest, and you need to be super sad about not being a mom, and that's what makes you a monster, is you can't have babies.
Oh, yeah, that was bad.
They really fucked her up in that movie.
I had written that out of my own brain. I'm a monster because I'm infertile.
Like, oh, oh, great, thanks.
Thanks, great. Okay, well, I guess that just makes you like the Hulk.
Yeah, so that's the kind of thing I'm talking about, is when you have a character that, even if you don't fuck it up right away, like, you know, Black Widow in regular Avengers, great, is just cares about the team and is competent and is the only reason they get a lot of information because she's good at her job. And then you get to Age of Ultron and she immediately just becomes a love interest mother figure that is sad about babies.
That is a rough cut. Okay, let's see. I'm going to say for my least favorite, I'll take the antithesis of your first choice, your favorite choice, which was the jester who ends up dying, and say the invincible, stupid, fourth wall breaking jester.
Oh, so Jar Jar?
Or Deadpool.
Oh, okay.
Something like that. Deadpool is a literally invincible jester character who constantly breaks the fourth wall. I don't like those characters just because there's no pathos. There's no reason for them to be in the story beyond to kind of just be a joke delivery system. Anything they do is irrelevant because they will, even if they fail, there's no consequences. If they succeed, there was never any threat. And they're just kind of goofing their way through whatever it is.
Well, yeah, I think that's when you take that sort of jester-type character and try to turn them into a protagonist. Because the whole point of the jester is commenting on what's happening in the main plot, but you still have this main plot.
Right, and if they're comedically invincible because they're a cartoon character, then I don't really care to see a movie about them. You know, a really good example would be the Green Lantern movie.
Huh.
Where it was like, nothing is going to happen to this guy. He won't stop wisecracking. He's a head floating above a cartoon body. Nothing's going to happen here. So yeah, I don't really care for that. There you go. And then what was the rest of the question? It was like, what's your favorite thing to play? Let's see. Oh, yeah, or to play in games and what makes them interesting or awful. I don't really try to play invincible jesters, so.
No, I do play. I tend to make a conscious choice sometimes in my games to play someone that is not the protagonist. If, like, I'll do either the jester or a supporting role or something like that. Someone who definitely has a role in a party but isn't like, I'm the driving force of this. If I know someone else at the table has been like, oh, I have made the character who is the abandoned prince who wants to get his kingdom back, and I know that that's going to be like a main plot point, I go, great, I'll be his childhood friend. So I'll be there for the ride, and I'll provide commentary, and I'll be a good character to be there, but I'm not going to be the one driving the action forward. At times you do want to be the protagonist, but I like specifically deciding from the start, I don't want to try and hog the limelight.
Yeah, my biggest thing when I'm designing a character is I always like to play characters that are uncharacteristically friendly, even for the game. So, like, if you're playing in a grim and gritty vampire game, I like to play a friendly guy. And I like that because it helps make the party easy. It's easier to foster a party environment if at least one person is always going to be on board with most of the decisions and doesn't want to get into too many arguments. I like making characters that are, like, community service-minded, even. Remember that D&D character I made who was like, oh, man, are those folks unloading a ship? I'm going to go help them unload that ship. Well, they're not going to pay you. I don't care. It's nice, and it's something for me to do during the half hour between now and our next mission. I like doing that sort of thing because it gives me paradoxically, it gives me an edge. No D&D player is just friendly. Normally, they're like, oh, I'll go to the bar and find an adventure and get in that dungeon. So
yeah. Well, I mean, especially if you're talking about something like any of the World of Darkness stuff, where if everyone else is sitting there and like, all right, my character is in a trench coat, smoking a cigarette, leaning against a wall. He wonders, how can he live as a monster? And then your character shows up and is like, hey, everyone, I brought cupcakes.
Yeah. I'm a vampire. I brought cupcakes.
I got blood cakes.
Which just means I'm always playing as the mayor from Buffy.
Which is the greatest character on that show.
So there you go. All right, next question. Dear processed food and deep-voiced child, who is objectively the best starter Pokemon and why? John, have you ever played the Pokemon games? I have not.
I have never played any Pokemon game for more than 5 minutes. I think the Pokemon game I've played more than anything else is Pokemon Snap.
Oh, you spent more time driving around in a little cart and taking pictures of Pokemon?
Yep. And the only reason that is true is because they had that game in a Blockbuster near me. And I just sat there playing it at one point.
I was going to say, the only Pokemon game I've played for more than about a minute and a half is Smash Brothers, which means that my Bulbasaur game is... No, it's Ivysaur, I think. My Ivysaur and Charizard game is off the charts. but that's about it. So,
yeah,
so,
no. Best, I mean, well, the objectively best starter Pokemon is going to be, in my opinion, the Squirtle. That's going to be the best.
Okay, because...
And I'm saying starter in the old games because I couldn't even tell you what a starter in, like, Black or White or Diamond or Sapphire or whatever
it's always a cute little thing. It's always, like, a little leaf guy with, like, that shoots boomerang leafs and has a long neck. And it's like, yeah! I can't remember. I couldn't tell you any of their names either, but it's always cute.
I used to know all of the original Pokemon. I knew every single one of the original because of the TV show.
I know, I can still tell you who's that Pokemon from, like, the first couple seasons of the show.
It was me, Austin! It was me all along!
I'm Poliwhirl, and it was me! I don't know. I'm just going to answer off any old Pokemon at all, because I don't know the actual starter Pokemon off the top of my head, so I'm going to say, objectively best Pokemon, Poliduck. Wait,
yeah.
Is that right?
Polyamorous.
Is it Poly? What is that little thing? Porygon. Porygon.
Yeah, I was like, well, there's Poliwhirl.
Poliwhirl and Psyduck together at last.
Psy.
No, it's going to be Porygon, the poor Pokemon that only exists in the virtual world and was briefly in the one episode that caused epileptic seizures, so he's never really shown up again.
Hooray! The best is Mr. Mime!
Because he's really annoying.
Because he's just a guy.
He's just a little football player.
Hi, Mr. Mime! Hey, look at me! I'm Mr. Mime!
I'm doing what you do!
I crave death!
God, that'd be great. I'm Mr. Mime! I'm not even a Pokemon! Don't put me... No!
Why, God?
I don't want to fight animals!
I'm just a dude!
I'm just going to take that cow Pokemon and eat it.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that... In the Pokemon universe, are there regular cows, or are there just, like, cowamons and...
I think cartoon-wise, all I see are, like, those bison and whatever. You never see any animals. Here's a chicken.
Yeah, you never see an animal that isn't a Pokemon, which means that someone has eaten them, or everyone's a vegetarian.
I think everyone is eating Pokemon.
Yeah, I think Pokemon are consistently on the menu, including Mr. Mimes.
Well, I think it depends. In the same way that, like, certain areas would be like, oh, well, you can't eat a horse. And then other places would be like, oh, horse is great. We eat that shit all the time.
You can't eat that dog-like Pokemon. Instead, you have to eat this horse-like Pokemon.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you'd show up at some place, and they would be like, oh, we're serving Bidoof. And you'd be like, oh, okay, I guess I could eat a Bidoof. That's useless.
I could eat a Bidoof or an Eevee. Probably eat a Pidgeotto.
But then you'd go into, like, some weird place in the Pokemon world, and they'd be like, we're serving Mr. Mime. You'd be like, oh, that's creepy.
Oh, well, when in Rome.
Try the eyeballs.
Try
like,
these.
Have a slice
of ghost Pokemon. You know what I hate is when you go to, like, the shitty Detroit of the Pokemon universe, and they serve you a slice of coughing. with some muck poured over it.
Here you go. Here's your government Pokemon meal. Muck and coughing.
Can I at least get a Diglett?
Diglett's extra.
That's all we can do. We can name a couple of the gross Pokemon. We did it.
Yay.
All right. Let's see. Oh, and that question came to us from Connor Pagel. Thanks very much, Connor. So didn't name you earlier. Next one coming to us from @LynxWinters on the Twitter. And it's all the cereal mascots gotta fight in an Enter the Dragon style tournament. Who are you putting money on?
In all of the cereal mascots? I mean, it's gotta be Tony the Tiger. He's an alpha predator. Like, he is an apex predator that will murder everyone. Mm-hmm. He's a tiger.
See, now I'm gonna, if you're throwing Tony the Tiger out onto the field, then I'm gonna throw in Snap, Crackle, and Pop, because they look like little imperialist British, and they'll be like, ah, Tiger, you say? Well, we'll destroy him with a Snap, a Crackle, and a Pop, and those are the noises our guns make.
Well, you can't just give them weapons.
Oh, Tony's got claws.
He's a tiger!
But he's just saying they're great. I mean, he doesn't tiger around or anything.
Yeah, but he does play plenty of sports. He is definitely in better shape than the rest of them.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, it's not like it's going to go to the fucking chef that makes Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
No, but it might go to the policeman that chases around the dog about Cookie Crisp.
But he's so incompetent!
But he's got a gun.
Look, Cookie Lives Matter.
Cookie Lives Matter.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That shouldn't have been said.
Of all of them, I have to say the only two I'm given a fighting chance here are Tony the Tiger and the Leprechaun.
Oh, you're gonna give it to the Leprechaun because he's got magic.
Yeah, he's magical.
Yeah, he does have magic. I mean, I might if it was a fight over something, like if there was some crack that they were fighting over, I might give it to Cuckoo.
Well, there you go. If they were actually fighting over a specific type of cereal,
yeah,
then Trix Rabbit and Cuckoo end up going ahead and having a bit of an edge,
yeah,
because they will go literally insane.
Also, if it's a race, then it's going to change up from just an Enter the Dragon style fight. If it turns to a race, then it's going to become something that's a little more between the Leprechaun, who can summon balloons to fly around in, and the Cap'n, because the Cap'n's got a boat. And
well, also, Toucan Sam follows his nose.
Oh, that's right. Toucan Sam does. I mean, that's only a race if there's like a floating, curvy rainbow trail.
Well, yeah, but I mean
that's how he gets places, so he just creates it to where he needs to go.
Yeah, he just follows the rainbow. And his nose.
Yeah, who's the worst? Who's the first to die?
And I mean, the first to die is, I think I mentioned him, the chef from Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Oh, yeah.
Little... He's a fat, friendly old man, and he is dead.
Could it also be one of the adults who doesn't know how they make the great taste of Cinnamon Toast Crunch?
But that's
or whatever.
Not a mascot.
Well, it might as well be. We haven't seen that chef from the Cinnamon Toast Crunch in forever.
I think it's the Smacks Frog. That guy, I think, just on principle, should go down first.
Oh, I just realized one of the ones that would totally have an edge for winning the tournament in general, which would be that horrible
honeycomb thing. Is exactly what I went to.
What the hell is that? I don't know what that is, but it will kill you for some honeycomb.
I think it's whatever Fizzgig was from the Dark Crystal.
That's one of those. It's like the evolved form of Fizzgig from the Dark Crystal. That's all I can do. And he's like, oh, I'll kill you for some fucking honeycomb.
I'll murder you and eat your children. Give me your honeycomb.
I have to get back to the monster universe and hang out with Sully.
Oh, that's good. Right. That was way more time than I thought we were going to spend on that.
Next question comes to us from Rob Ty. And the question is, what is the shittiest decade? Like for films, music, pubic hair maintenance. And also, which one averages out to be the worst one in general? So I guess that pretty much means, you know, from this century, so we can't be like, oh, it's the 1730s.
Obviously.
I mean, those were terrible, am I right? Did you see the shoes?
All right, well, I mean, it's obvious. It's the 70s for everything.
It's pretty much the 70s for everything but boobs. The 70s had some wicked great boobs, but otherwise, it was a pretty low time in human. I mean, the color schemes were garbage.
Okay, yeah. Fashion? Terrible. Music? Terrible. Films, the actual worst things ever.
Yeah, something went wrong somewhere in there. I'd throw the 60s out there as really annoying as well. I mean, we don't have to see about as much of them as we did, but they're basically just like a blander 70s in a lot of respects.
Well, for me, the 60s was more...
All the drug shit you hear about the 60s was like 1 year. Like 1 year out of the 60s was that shit, and the rest of it was just nothing.
Oh yeah, you had a lot more of that free love type idea.
Well, you do now. That's everyone's interpretation of the 60s. The actual 60s were, oh, it's boring. It's basically the 50s again.
But you had the start of an idea of, we want to change things.
True.
And then the 70s happened and they were like, oh no, we went too far. We changed too much. We hit disco. We dug too greedily and too deep.
Our pants grew too wide.
Yeah, you got the drums in the deep, and behind them is a bunch of disco, and it was terrible.
Our appetite for our pants hems grew too far.
Yeah, that was the problem.
Ran out of colors, and we ended up on nothing but rust brown and avocado green.
Yeah, so that's that. And then, oddly, the films, they were just like, we've put all of our energy into making everything else weird, so our movies are garbage.
Our movies are ultra boring. I can think of like three examples of movies from the 70s that are legitimately good. The first Star Wars, Jaws, and The Warriors.
There you go. There's the 70s for you. Everything else, boring crap. And you know what? Especially Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, God.
Fuck
don't
that
even,
movie.
I don't.
Fuck it
so
much. It's
so boring. Yeah. I'm going to throw The Shining on that pile, too.
Oh, okay.
You don't care.
I kind of care. I mean, not as much as I probably should as a horror film guy, but I kind of care.
And probably a Stephen King fan, too.
Well,
I mean, if you're a Stephen King fan, you should not like that movie. Stephen King doesn't like that movie.
Well, it's because...
He's a crazy old man, is why.
Well, also because Kubrick basically went, I'm going to do my own thing.
I feel like that's all Kubrick did, is he bought the rights to things and then made something else. I wonder if he was trolling people. he's like, hey, Arthur C. Clarke, watch what I do to 2001, buddy.
Yeah, you like that?
You like that? Look what I'm doing to it right now with my dick. I'm Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah, that was the best Stanley Kubrick impression ever.
I'm Stanley Kubrick.
Look at what I'm doing to your property with my dick.
Great. That's our voice for Stanley Kubrick from now on.
Congratulations, Stanley right. Kubrick.
So there you go. I guess we're going to say it's the 70s. It averages up to be the worst decade ever. I'm going to give special credit, though, to the boobs of the 70s. They were A-OK. Things fell apart in the 80s when it got all surgery style and everyone had big, flake beach ball boobs. Although the 80s were the best for pubic hair maintenance, oddly enough.
So there you go.
Yep. Everything's got a good side. This question... All right. Okay. This question comes to us from the Reddit AMA of Barack Obama we just Googled. How do you balance family life and hobbies with, well, being the president of the United States?
John? Well, I mean, it's difficult. I'll tell you that. There's a lot of pressure on me at all times to be a certain way, and you've got to balance your family and your personal life.
He's doing
when I go out and I play basketball, or I spend time with Michelle or the kids. It's a welcome diversion.
I'm Diamond Joe Biden. My dick fell out.
Oh,
hey, I gotta lay low for a while. you get any mail for a psycho? That's for me. Don't open it though. I'm Diamond Joe.
There you go. There you go.
All right. Next question comes to us from Mike Gowerly, and it's which fully functional prop would you like to have if you were allowed to choose anything from any film ever made? Like, say, for example, the remote from Click or the Millennium Falcon.
Any film ever made.
Yeah, any film ever made. So you can't have something from a TV show.
I was going to say, are we including TV movies in this?
You know what? I'm going to let you have TV just so you can say the thing from Sliders that lets them be sliders, because I know that's what you're getting ready
for. No, I was going to say the TARDIS.
Oh, well, that's okay. All right. Well, there is a Doctor Who movie.
Yeah.
So you can say that. That's fine. It was that TV movie in America that was, it was like the worst part of Doctor
they've
Who.
They've made several Doctor Who movies, but they weren't like theatrical movies.
So you want the TARDIS, though.
I mean, that's the obvious answer for any, like, what one item would you want? I mean, it's basically, the TARDIS is great because you can go anywhere in space and time. Like, the DeLorean from Back to the Future would be rad as fuck, but then you have to worry about being in a DeLorean in, like, the 1600s or something, and then that's fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, the TARDIS auto-translates for you as well, so no matter where you go.
See, I might take the lady that was created in Weird Science, but instead, I'm going to go with the original TARDIS, which may not be the original TARDIS, because I don't know when Roald Dahl did his work, and say the Wonkavator. I would like the great glass Wonkavator, because it doesn't just go to places in other dimensions and times, but it just goes to random shenanigans nonsense. I mean... goes to a place where you get younger instead of older.
Well, that's basically what the TARDIS does.
I know.
It is episodes of Doctor Who.
But you've never seen Doctor Who go get an Oompa Loompa. So, you know, I'm going to have to give it to... Maybe. I'm giving it to the Great Glass Wonkavator. That's my choice.
So, what we want are boxes that
fly. We want
fly.
Boxes with lots of buttons that fly around.
That's it. That's all we want.
I've been thinking about this for a while, and I didn't know you were also going to say a flying box. So now I'm like, man, should I change my answer to something else?
No, just flying boxes. That's all anyone wants. Now, if I have to go with actual theatrical movies and not TV movies so I don't get the TARDIS, then I'm going to go ahead and say the book from Neverending Story. Because then I can fucking go into that story, get my own goddamn luck dragon, and then scare children. Yeah. All I want in life is to scare children into dumpsters.
Or you could stop Artax from drowning in the Swamp of Sorrows so that people would no longer be wrong about how it's the saddest when he dies, according to you. Because you could be like, oh, it didn't even happen. The only sad part in the movie is the rockbiter lamenting the death of his family.
No, so, I would just use Falcor to fly me to everyone's house who was wrong about that and be like, hey, Falcor, tell them they're wrong. Hey, kid, you're wrong.
And then they're like, why am I scared of you? You're like a giant dog Santa.
I'm coming to eat your soul.
I'm getting in a dumpster, even though you're very harmless looking.
Hey, man, if a giant flying dog-faced long furry white thing was flying at me and it was going, I would shit myself.
Okay, but what if you saw on its back what you know to be a shrimpy little nerd?
Like, I would be like, you know, oh my god, he's wrapped that shrimpy nerd up to eat later, like a spider and a fly.
I'd be like, if a shrimpy little nerd can get control of you, then I'm pretty sure I can get control of you. I'm just gonna push him off you. I'm taking that. Give me that dragon.
Oh, that'd be great. It's just a scene at the end of Neverending Story where Bastion gets knocked off the dragon. He's like, give me your dragon. Yeah.
Yeah. Then he gets up on the dragon and pees on Bastion from the dragon. Pee on him too, dragon.
Oh,
I have to. You're my rider. Don't give me a shot, though. All right. Well, in that case, if you're taking that, then I'll take the luck dragon.
That's not a prop.
It is too.
No.
I'll take R2-D2.
There you go. He's kind of a prop.
It's not a prop either. It's a living thing, kind of. It's a robot.
It's a robot. It has programmed sentience, not actual sentience.
Can it get married?
I mean, there are a lot of people campaigning against robo-marriage.
In this America. Can a robot marry the luck dragon?
Well, if the liberals have anything to say about it.
That's just a slippery slope. If you let gay people get married, then you'll have robots marrying luck dragons.
And how rad is that?
What are their kids even going to look like?
A big robo dragon that grants wishes and beeps at you? Wait a minute. This is amazing.
This is the best. That's changing my answer to a big robot dragon that grants wishes and beeps at you. From the official Cheese Dudes movie.
Yes, that one. It came out.
You just didn't see it.
It was in theaters for a second.
All right, last question is, what's the weirdest way you injured yourself? And that comes to us from one word, Isabel.
All right, the weirdest way I've injured myself is probably I have a scar on my hand from grabbing a backpack. Which is just weird to me.
That is a weird way it's strange that you get a scar from grabbing a backpack. That is sad.
Yeah. No, it was, so one of those backpacks that has, like, the metal bar thing in them for support.
Uh-huh.
Of, like, I can put more shit on top of it. And I went to grab the backpack and just sliced my hand across the metal bar because it had been worn in one part to make it sharp.
Mm-hmm.
And then just, like, sliced my hand open and got a big old scar there. And that is the dumbest, well, probably the dumbest way I've injured myself.
I jumped off a cliff.
That's good.
I've done that a lot, actually. I've jumped off a lot of cliffs and piers back when I was with the junior lifeguards. And it was a training exercise thing where you would jump off piers to learn how to do it so you could rescue people at the base. But in Boy Scouts, I jumped off a cliff overlooking a portion of the Colorado River. And when I hit the water, and I did it right, but I wasn't wearing any kind of footwear. So when I hit the water, it gave me a foot bruise. Because it slapped the flats, and it was like a 55-foot jump. So it hit the bottom so hard that my feet bruised up and turned purple on the base, and I had to spend the rest of the whole day barefoot, and I had to crawl into my camp when we finally got to it.
Wow.
Everyone thought my feet were broken. It turned out they just had horrible bruises. But yeah, jumping off a cliff, which, you know, is not a weird way to hurt yourself, because you should hurt yourself if you jump off a cliff.
Yeah, that's not the weirdest way to hurt yourself. Like, okay, I threw my back out, jumping over a piece of shrubbery that was, I'm gonna say, maybe six inches off the ground. Like, I did a tiny hop. Now, let me also preface this by saying, at the time, I was 14.
I'm gonna say this basically doesn't really sound like you're weird for injuring yourself, but rather that you're just a shrimpy nerd, and then I should push you off of Falcor. That's what I'm getting from this.
No, it was the weirdest thing of just like, oh, I'm at, like, a hotel. You know those little, like, tiny, like, flower divider things in between, like, a walkway and then the little walkway where the rooms are?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to jump over that. And then I landed and, just threw my back out for no reason.
That sucks.
And it's not like, oh, I'm an old man and I threw my back out. I'm like, what is happening to me? What the fuck?
I'm going to stick with my cliff story because I've never really... I mean, I've stabbed myself with a knife once. That was unfortunate. I stabbed myself in the hand with a knife and then went to the movies because it wouldn't stop bleeding. So I just sat and watched a movie with a handful of gauze.
Huh.
That was my idea for how to get over the problem of it. But otherwise, I don't really... Most of my weird injuries came from other things. Like, I was stung once by a particularly nasty jellyfish.
Yeah, and I burned my hand once trying to sharpen a pencil.
I have a scar from a dolphin bite.
See, that's a good weird injury.
But I didn't do it.
Well, yeah, you're not a dolphin.
So, yeah. But I have a little puncture scar from a dolphin bite because I spent a lot of time working with dolphins back when I was working for SeaWorld. I mean, I was a tour guide, but even as a tour guide, you got to interact with them a little bit. And so I got a little dolphin bite, which wasn't a big deal, but it did leave a little scar.
Yeah, well, there you go.
There you go. Okay, we gotta hurry, because we're already at an hour, and we have to go through our poll still, because we're doing the third Afterthought poll.
Yay! All right, so real quick, we're just going to go ahead and let you know what the categories are. You can check out what the options for answers are as well.
Yeah. So let's see. We've got what's the worst fourth movie in a franchise?
This came out of a conversation I had where determined that a lot of the times the fourth movie in any given movie franchise is just garbage.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, he was telling me that he wanted to put it in, and my first thought was Star Trek IV is great. Star Trek IV is unimpeachable, you shut your whore mouth. And then I was like, oh, but it's kind of an island in a stream, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, I even mentioned before you said that, that the one odd outlier is Star Trek.
Yeah, well, even then, even only half of Star Trek, because the fourth Next Generation Star Trek film was Nemesis.
Yeah, and that is
the worst. Anyway, I don't even think it's on the list. We also have, because, you know, we asked what the worst is, what's the best fourth movie in a franchise?
Yeah, what bucks the trend?
Yeah, Thunderball, you know, something like that. Okay, and then we've got some listener-suggested poll questions. We should go through these entirely because they're listener-suggested. So, what's the these both come to us from Jeff Jaffe, who sent us a real question as well, but also wants some stuff in the Afterthought poll. It's his life's dream. And he wanted to know, what's the objectively best Starburst flavor?
Yeah.
And then he also wanted to know, why does anyone listen to country music?
And then our actual for realsies question we want to know from you, what bonus content would you like to see added to the Patreon? We've started getting up to the point where we are reached most of our goals, and in the Patreon we want to know what can we do that would be good for you, the listener.
Yeah.
So we have a few different options for things we could do, adding in to our Movie Mastery podcast, where we'd be able to do an in-theaters one. So we'd actually review something that is currently playing.
Now, it wouldn't just be whatever's good and currently playing. It would stick to the whole thing where people get to pick what we have to go watch. This just opens up the door for us to be forced into watching, like, Tyler Perry movies and Nicholas Sparks things. that's really... I mean, the benefit for us is that we don't end up watching anything from the 70s. But on the other hand, we, you know, there's some real garbage in theaters.
Oh, yeah. But other things like a little behind-the-scenes video that we can put out, where we can have someone just videoing us as we try to put this dumb bullshit together, so you can see how terrible we are in reality.
Really terrible. Then there's also a winning a Skype RP session where we'll actually play in your Skype games.
Yeah. Also, if you give us more money, we'll be clothed.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's not like it matters. I don't have a camera.
Oh, I do. Oh, I do.
Oh, I kind of want to play in your room.
Yeah, play in my room. Play in my dungeon.
So we would have to get a camera in that. Well, you know what? That's probably why we have Patreons in the first place. We could get a webcam and play in your Skype RP games. People have asked us for that. They've asked us if we'd like to be in their games a couple of times, so we put it on the list. I don't know. And then actual stuff, like swag-type items.
Yeah, so dice or stickers.
We need to make a lot of money for that, because those things are shockingly expensive to get to all of your interested fans.
A single die is ridiculously expensive.
Yeah, so, but if you want some System Mastery-branded dice or some stickers or something, then we can add those as bonus content, things that we'd actually start throwing out to our listeners if we hit a certain point in the Patreon.
Yeah.
And then also...
Maybe we just buy a pig.
Yeah, we just buy a pig. Just System Mastery buys a pig.
Yeah, well, you get a mascot, the pig.
We bought a pig. The System Mastery pig that we bought. And I don't think either of us is living in a place where we're zoned to own a pig, but we'll buy a pig and it'll just be somewhere and you'll just know we have a pig.
Yeah, just know that we have a pig.
Yeah, and you know, your contribution lets you know that we have a pig somewhere.
Yeah. So, we buy a pig. Be sure to check out the poll there. We might have some more questions for you on there as well.
Yeah, you never know. We try to have 7 or 8 every time. That's going to be in a link on the page here, but you can also find it just by heading over to the website, which is SystemMasteryPodcast.com.
Oh, that segue.
If you also would like to follow us, we are on iTunes and Stitcher. You can subscribe there or to rate and review. Or you can find us at SystemMastery@gmail.com, System Mastery on Facebook, or System Mastery at Twitter to send us all of your various questions, afterthought suggestions, movie mastery suggestions, RPGs you'd like us to review, and so on and etc.
Yeah, so anything you want to know, anything you want us to review, anything you want us to watch, let us know through any of those channels.
Mm-hmm.
And again, be sure, if you like the show, rate and review. Go ahead, let other people know about us. That way we can actually grow and maybe someday live the dream of having a System Mastery pig.
That's all we want is a System Mastery pick. Hey, you know, we were even on System Mastery on Tumblr as of last week.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
Finally, that sweet Tumblr money is going to come in.
Well, the thing is, I registered us as System Mastery on Tumblr 2 years ago, but I put up a tumble. I don't even know what you call your posts on Tumblr. A tumble?
Tumbles?
A tumble? So I put up a tumble on the System Mastery Tumblr the other day, just thanking a friend of the show for linking to us. The Fuck Yeah D&D Tumblr mentioned us as a podcast people should go listen to. And I was like, I don't know how you tumble. I don't know how to. So I just went
we
back.
We are
and,
old men.
I don't know what Tumblr is. It seems like the worst format to me, but you know, whatever. It's awesome. The only one that seems worse to me is Reddit, which feels like someone just resurrected in like a DARPANET server from the 70s and was like, here, use this to talk about how you hate fat people.
Yay.
But there you go. All right. So that has been the System Mastery Afterthought Podcast. We'll see you in a couple of days for a movie mastery and in a week for our next episode of the System Mastery RPG Review. Thank you very much, and have a pleasant week.
Bye!